Thank you for tuning in to this message from Kingdom Heirs International, headquarters located in Flagstaff, Arizona.
Everybody find a spot okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. You guys excited for tonight?
Yes.
That's good. Okay. So for hosting tonight, I feel like what came up to me was commitment, and this is all just like a reiteration of what's been taught beforehand. But commitment is when knowledge is applied and when encounter is applied. So if Anya and I get married, on paper that's commitment, but I mean I could not be committed to her after marriage. So you have to do something with your commitment.
Wait till you read the first part of my notes.
And then also this parashat, I looked up what it meant, and it meant that there is importance, value, and truth behind your words. Every little thought and decision is a commitment, whether you are aware of it or not. Megan had a teaching on being aware of your agreements. So try to practice the ability to be accountable and responsible within yourself. And for tonight, the prompting question to be thinking about is, would others describe you as committed or unreliable and apathetic?
That's good.
Yes. Cool with that?
Yeah.
The question?
Yeah.
No.
Actually. Actually.
At least the first part and the last part.
Commitment is when knowledge is applied and encounter is applied. And then the question was, would others describe you as committed or unreliable and apathetic?
Well, the tone has most definitely been set. And first, Mom and Dad, we are really excited that you're home. We missed you very much. But we appreciated being a part of your time and being able to see what you guys were up to every day. And we understood and did not take it personally that you cried when you were coming home. So, 3 times. Not just once. Not just
he goes, are you leaving? And I was like...
He probably sees that often, I'm sure. Well, we are glad that you're home, and we are excited to receive from you. So just so that we're all on the same page as far as what has been established in us while you were gone, there was a work being done. We don't lay the work down when home is not overseen by the two of you,
right.
But we see it as an opportunity to own home in ways that we don't get the opportunity to, or we might take advantage of when you're here. Mm-hmm. So some of the things that were established in us while you were gone was really being able to recognize in the last portion just the detail and the intention in his instruction over the next generation as he was preparing them to enter the promised land. And we have determined that we are not going to be the old generation that dies off, but that we are the next generation that operates under a different spirit,
right,
that learns how to be assistants, mm-hmm, yeah, so that we can fully witness in truth and not in falsehood.
Yeah.
And on top of discerning the difference between a true witness and a false witness, we saw sacrifice as an opportunity to recognize in us that if we don't live a lifestyle of continuous sacrifice, we will quickly forget who the source is. Mm-hmm. And that source has been so gracious in our journey that to step into a place now of self-righteousness where we dismiss the source of our deliverance, the source of our freedom, the source of the new foundation that has been established, the source of our restoration and our redemption, even back into covenant with Him. We want to safeguard that we don't allow that dismissal of the source to put us back in an old place.
Mm-hmm.
So really what Yahweh did was reminded us that without that consistent presenting of sacrifice, we begin to think that we're the source. Mm-hmm. Then we move from the pursuit of righteousness into self-righteousness. Mm-hmm. And that's what we took time last week to really identify, was how does self-righteousness look in us? And Yahweh gave us some things that we can be watching for in our lives, four things that everybody not only remembers what they are, but was pressing into them all weekend long. And this week, as we added the new portion to what's being established, to ensure that tonight, as you release, that there is a foundation of pursuit for righteousness and not self-righteousness. Yep. So we're not going to even judge the word. We're not going to get defensive in what gets presented. We're not going to operate in a Lone Ranger mentality. I didn't come in with a Lone Ranger badge on that states, like, you don't have a right to tell me or define what you're going to define or position me or direct me or whatever. We also came in absolute self-awareness, and we're not going to excuse ourselves in its lack, so that we don't grow. So that's where we're at.
It's awesome to take two chapters of all the sacrifices and break it down. And we're going to focus on self-righteousness. Well, tonight you guys are going to get Deb. So he is going to be teaching on the two Torah portions, and I have a word for the family with these two Torah portions, probably more primarily focused on the vows, on the vow side of it. I hope that I'm going to be able to do due diligence. I just know that there is a word for you, because I feel like tonight might encompass a lot of what's been going on. We have the crossover. We have the leadership shift. We're getting out of numbers and into duty. There's a lot that's going on. We are in our final year of Torah. Yeah. There is some things that he's moving us into. Clarity is coming, and it's almost like there's these, I don't want to say compartmentalized, but we've got like I'm just thinking of the Friday night, like we have the crossover aspect of where we're supposed to be. Then in the midst of the crossover, he's like, part of that crossover is acknowledging a leadership change. But then there's defining what that means for all of us and what that means from even 15 years ago. What that means for us, what that means for you, and what that means for how you relate outside of here is really what I think he wants to press on. So there's a lot that he's going to kind of tie up tonight. So I do have a word, but Dad's going to be teaching. I really do think when I get to it, I might have Jalen repeat. I'm like literally like mind blown. That's like the second time you've done it. Let me just really quick. We're talking about vows. So one of the things I wrote down here, this is just a side note, just to explain to you guys how much Yahweh's in this is the reason why I'm doing this. Because I just told Missy, it might get awkward. So I'm really glad that you guys aren't coming in judgmental, and I'm really glad that you guys are going to be aware. Because the Torah portions are reading us to the point that I'm like, this is awkward. Because when I got to talk about these things, people are going to think, you're talking about what's been going on in my life. And it's like, I even got to the point where I'm like, well, should we just not teach on the Torah portion? Because people are going to think that we're like trying, but it's just, we are so being read. It's where I know that we don't think that way, but that's how much Yahweh is after what it is that he's after. I mean, it is, honestly, it's so comforting, because I would just think, what is going on? And then I read the Torah portion, I'm like, oh. So it's like almost comforting in a sense that we're being read, and at the same time,
exposed that were being read. Yeah. So, anyways, I want to read this part because we're going over vows. And I said, well, this is interesting. We're going to be going over what vows are, which happen to be beyond belief and convictions. Mm-hmm. But isn't it crazy that we just kind of got to a place where we're feeling good about being bold about our convictions?
Yes.
And here I am, he's already bringing a word, and that's just the beginning.
Yes. Yeah.
Your conviction doesn't really mean anything if you don't do the conviction.
Right.
So having a conviction doesn't really matter.
Yes.
I would say that some of us are having a hard time even having a conviction,
yeah.
Let alone having a conviction and then being able to show that conviction.
Yeah.
And my example was, you're married because you act or walk out that marriage.
Yeah.
You would not be married if you just read your vows. You would not be married if all you did was just keep reading your vows and got some knowledge about your vows and studied your vows. You wouldn't really be married anymore.
Yeah.
You can be legally married, but you're actually married because you followed through and were committed to the vows and acted like you were married, right? You are married because you act or walk out your marriage, not because you have a conviction that you're married. I don't have a conviction that I'm married. I'm married because I act like I'm married.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I show the world that I'm married.
Yeah.
That was
really
good.
Right? Yeah. So no marriage would make it if you just read your vows and didn't do them.
Yes.
Oh, God. So anyways, that's when we get to vows. So I'm just bringing that up because he didn't know I was going to talk about that. And I'm like, so long. We can go home.
Yeah.
Okay. The only other couple things I was going to do was... it might be a repeat. We're going to do it anyways. going back to last week, last week and the last couple of weeks, obviously he's been having us trained in being a true witness.
Yeah.
Why? Because if we have a vow, he's telling us what a vow is, which we've already learned back in Leviticus, is beyond lip service.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then this is what's happening, is he's teaching us how to be a true witness.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so everything that Megan talked about is when she talked about the source, remember, I just want us to remember this. When you don't remember the source, then what happens? You begin to start to worship not the source, but the creation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it's easy when I'm teaching you what idolatry is, when you start to worship creation, like animals, let's say, over who created the animals, right? Yeah. That becomes idolatry when you worship creation. It can happen with our kids. When you worship the creation and not the source of that creation. It's easy to teach on idolatry. What Megan talked about with self-righteousness is ultimately idolatry. You're just the golden calf. That's where it gets dangerous, because it's easy to be able to say, well, I don't worship a golden calf, but if you're the golden calf, you're not aware you're worshiping.
Because you're
the golden calf.
Exactly.
In fact, you are expecting other people to worship you. So you're not even having to worry about what you're worshiping. You're just a statue. You're a stagnant golden statue with the expectation that everybody should worship you. That's idolatry. Self-righteousness. Okay. I did want to clarify, because I do know that there was a question that had come forth about this. When Megan was talking about interpreting, interpreting the word, I want us to understand that when she was talking about interpreting the word, we're always going to have an interpretation. That's not the issue. Interpreting the word is not the issue. The issue is when you use the interpretation to be able to gratify yourself or benefit yourself, and you're tossed to and fro and you're inconsistent. That's what's called a convenient gospel. A big marker for those that are interpreting it wrong, like one way to just know if someone's interpreting the word wrong, is to look at if they're lawless or not. Because it comes down, this is how bold this is getting. It's getting to the point where we're learning to, I don't know, I feel like we're like trucking along and we're like, okay, we're starting to like really like gain our identity, right? What was the wilderness for? To build our identity. But then he says, you're going to have to go into a land and you're going to have to act out that identity. So I almost feel like there's this crossover or this boldness that's coming to be able to identify. Like we will no longer be able to be tossed to and fro and argue over interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Because it'll be very fundamental.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you lawless or not?
Yeah.
If you're filled with the law, then we can have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But then you're already going to be Hebraic, so it's going to be a rabbinical conversation. You guys know what I mean by a rabbinical conversation?
Yeah.
You can have three rabbis in a room and eight different interpretations, and they're all right. But you're on a different playing field than talking to somebody who is lawless trying to argue scripture. It's two totally different things, right? So using it, so we're all going to have interpretation. We're supposed to have theological conversations and synergy and, well, what about this and what about that? And it's never black and white. It should never be black and white.
Yeah, it's good.
But there's a difference when I'm synergizing with someone that has the same...
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it. Never mind. I'm not going to say that. Never mind. We don't argue over convenient gospel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're arguing over the deeper mysteries. Does that make sense? You're not going tit for tat trying to talk about what the gospel is, okay?
Yeah.
So again, the big marker is lawlessness. Now, I know that might sound like, oh, that's just a comment I would make. So we're going to go to the Word. Anybody read the daily Bible verse today?
Yeah.
Jacob 1:22. It's today's verse. This is what it says. But be doers of the word and not just hearers or readers only. Now, we quote that all day long, but anybody read the next part of it? Or else you delude yourself.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Open up the scripture. Somebody read it. Because I've quoted that so many times. Don't just be a hearer or a reader of the word, but be a doer of the word. Read the last part of that little sentence. Somebody read it. Jacob 1:22, which is James in some of your Bibles.
But doers of the word and not hearers only, deluding yourselves.
So you're delusional if you don't do the word. Now, I don't need to argue with someone whether you do the word or not, because it's not arbitrary over your pastoral ideology of what church you go to. It's not your personal interpretation of the word. You either do the word or you don't. And if you openly say, I don't have to do the word because he freed me from having to do it, you're delusional.
Yeah.
End of story. We don't need to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
That's very
that was just today's scripture. All right. And then again, what she was talking about is if you worship the source, then his ways are higher than yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He doesn't need your innovation.
Yeah.
He needs your obedience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. She already said it. There's four things we're going to be looking at all through, not just this week, but all through the coming weeks. Evaluating self-righteousness is watching judgmental. Lack of self-awareness, lone ranger, and defensiveness. I think I'm just going to stop there. I'll just say this to make sure that it's clear. You guys understand what it means to be judgmental versus righteous judgment. Because we're crossing over. So we're going to talk about this later on when I try to tie all this together. But no longer are the days where we play it safe for the sake of saying, I don't want to be judgmental. Because if you're not delusional, there is righteous judgment. I will say this. We have guardrails, prophetic guardrails. Up until this point, those guardrails have been to make sure you survive. We've told them now the guardrails are no longer to make sure you survive. The guardrails are to make sure that he is glorified and that his righteousness will prevail.
Amen.
That means if his righteousness is not first and foremost, we're not concerned about your survival anymore.
Amen.
Does that make sense? The guardrails are now more on upholding his righteousness than upholding our survival.
Yeah.
That is part of the crossover, and that's part of the leadership shift. This should be huge, because what that's going to do should not be a threat to you. That should be, I'm beyond surviving, I'm thriving, and it's about his righteousness because we need to go and take a land.
Yeah.
And you are going to be positioned differently in taking over the land than you were learning your identity in the wilderness.
Yeah.
There is going to be a difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
Teach us about vows and vengeance.
Does all this make anybody nervous?
Yes.
Does anybody have butterflies or you're nervous? Or?
Why?
Because, well, it's good. I mean, it should.
Yeah.
It should, because
that's what I meant.
He's... It should, because that shift, like we've talked about, a leadership paradigm shift requires or demands a shift as far as the entire family goes. And that shift that she just spoke to is, he's been showing us his allegiance and his commitment to us throughout the entire wandering process.
Oh, that's a word right
now
there.
Now he's saying, I'm removing the safeguard. And I'm expecting you only to survive,
that's
but
literally the question
I'm expecting
this week.
You to go out and be confrontational.
Yeah.
Confrontational.
That's good.
And I'm going to explain what I mean by that. But what he's doing in this transition is he's saying, I'm going to test your allegiance to me.
Yes.
Not in a safe environment, but with no safeguards, you now have to go out where your allegiance can be tested to me. Because I've shown it to you, now you need to prove your allegiance to me.
Yeah,
that was really good.
Right? And with expansion, it's going from the nation and the heads of the nation and the heads of the tribes, it's going all the way down to individuals and individual households that have to uphold the same standards.
Yeah.
So when I think about what it is, I really hope that everybody has surpassed and evaluated and examined and worked through those four areas that Megan talked about, because for the people that have, what's being released tonight is a dynamic that I feel like we have had this anointing throughout our entire marriage. We've walked in it, and it's been something that I've been meditating on this all week, and this Torah portion is stirring it up because I feel like it puts words to exactly what this is. But for the people that have worked through those things, you are going to receive an impartation in this Torah portion that has the power within it to change the entire way you walk through life.
Yep.
Completely flip.
Yeah.
Turn upside down, change the dynamics that you have with interpersonally, with work, in the spirit, with abusive authority, any scenario you can think of. It's something that is largely invisible, but people can feel it.
Yeah.
They may not be able to describe it, but they can tell when it's there or when it's not. Mm-hmm. Okay? And when I think about just what Yahweh is saying, when I say confrontational, he's calling us, if you just take a step back from the Torah portion and you look at what's happening in simple terms, he's saying, go in and possess something that I promised to you and do not retreat. Mm. So he's saying, take territory and do not retreat. That's a very confrontational type of dynamic. If I tell any one person, you have to go take possession of something and do not give it up no matter what.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's testing our allegiance because he's allowing war to be declared on you openly with no safeguard. Does that make sense? In the wilderness, he protected us.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He took us different routes because he knew we'd be under threat. He safeguarded us. He protected us so that our survival, our identity could be built up. But now he's removing the safeguards and he's allowing war to be declared on you so that you can show your allegiance to him mm-hmm. by possessing what he said and not retreating.
Yeah.
Okay. If you think about it, we live by a word, right? The word of God is what we live by. It's what we proclaim to live by, a literal word. And I feel like this is so simple yet so profound, and I believe, like I said, if you have worked through those areas or you are actively, diligently working through those things that Megan and Mom talked about, you can fully receive this impartation. It's interesting because if you aren't working through those things, then you're kind of naturally in a category where you're not receiving this impartation. You're kind of on the, I don't really know how to say it, you're on the negative side of it. This is just going to point out things that you're subjected to, mm-hmm. because you're not operating out of this dynamic that I'm getting ready to talk about. If you're not operating out of this dynamic, then you are wide open and vulnerable and subject to being to having war declared upon you. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Whether you've worked through those things or not, war is being allowed to be declared on you. Mm-hmm. Whether you're aware of it or not, if you're not aware that your allegiance to him is being tested, then you're probably not demonstrating your allegiance to him if you're not even aware, right? Which is why this Torah portion is pointing this out, so that we know it's like you've graduated to a point to where it's no longer a training environment. It's no longer controlled conditions. It's not safe anymore. But now you are the thing that is going to that's going to have authority to displace something while you show allegiance to him. Right? That's what's happening. And that's why I'm saying, is anybody nervous? Is anybody, you should be. You should be, right? When you transition and you cross over and you graduate from a controlled training environment to no safeguards, and now you're the authority now. That should bring up some, if you're like, I'm fine, then I'd be a little concerned. Right? So I want us to be perfectly clear and understand what it is that's happening. Yahweh's allowing war to be declared on you. And he's saying, your allegiance is being tested. I've shown you mine. Now you show me your allegiance to me. Mm-hmm. Okay? And it's going to depend on our words.
When you say war, what are you talking about?
I'm going to get into it.
Oh, okay.
But we live by a word. Just think about that. That's a vow. Yahweh made a vow. That's what we live by. We live or die by that. And so the scripture that comes to mind when I think about this, it kind of sets the stage for the way that we're being called to operate, is Psalm 23:5, which says, "You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies." Mm-hmm. And it gets me so fired up and excited, because that's the type of mind state and spiritual condition that we need to be in. And when you think about that scripture, it's David making a declaration. And to understand that scripture, it's not just some poetic, it's not just some metaphorical thing. It's David, a man with actual experience, to be able to say, "You are hosting a table for me to sit at in the midst of my enemies," because David was a warrior. He was pursued. He was under the threat of being killed. He governed while under that threat in the midst of chaos.
Yeah.
And he knew, if Yahweh sets a table for me, the host and his authority is what's going to safeguard me from the presence of the enemies all around me. And I can be seated at a table and hosted at a table and not be worried or concerned, or not let that pressure or that enemy dictate where I'm seated.
That's chaos.
We're stepping into a place, and this is absolutely critical, and I believe everybody's life would shift, change, transform 1,000% with this impartation, where it doesn't matter the chaos or the pressure or being surrounded by your enemy, your accuser, whatever kind of pressure or confrontation that comes to you, it is not going to dictate where you're seated.
Mm-hmm.
We're going through a transition right now where there's by design, there's an exposure coming of how we are pushed in and out of our seat depending on the pressure that the enemy brings to us. Or we're in our seat because we're avoiding the pressure, or we're still seeking safety from the enemy because we're still acting like we're in the wilderness when we're not. If you're avoiding pressure or you're avoiding the enemy, you're avoiding confrontation because you're seeking safety, then you're thinking like you're in the wilderness still, when he's saying, "I've removed the safeguards and now you are the authority that has to sit at a table and not be pushed around."
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yep.
So we have to understand that this is the lens that I feel like kind of gives paints a big picture backdrop to what we're getting into. The dynamic that I feel like this Torah portion articulates so well and puts words to is what I would call command presence. And we've talked about that before, and that's a term that everybody, I believe, in this next season that we're in is going to become intimately familiar with, not because you hear it taught about, but because you're going to begin to understand what that is and you're going to begin to operate in it. You're going to begin to carry a level of command presence, which I would just, in simple terms, I would say is you exercising your spiritual authority, right? We've survived, we've gained identity, but now he's saying you have to operate in a level of authority that is going to be invisible to people. They may not know what to call it. They may not know how to articulate it, but they can feel whether you carry it or not.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
People can feel whether their pressure that they put on you is pushing you out of your seat or if you're not budging from your seat.
Right.
People can feel that. And they will act accordingly.
Yep.
If you carry command presence and you exercise your spiritual authority appropriately, which we're going to break down, people will not know what that is that you're carrying, but they will respect it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I'm talking about literally and spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
This war that's being declared on you, which I'm going to get into, is a war that is trying to redirect your allegiance or have you add to your allegiance something that is not within the covenant that you have with him. Okay?
That's
good. So command presence is you exercising your spiritual authority that he's giving us in this crossover.
Yeah.
Okay? It's something you have to exercise. It's not knowledge based. There was a season of knowledge and understanding, but now you're having to operate within it, and the more you operate within it, the more you sharpen it and the more strong it becomes. Okay, the more you try to hide from pressure or avoid confrontation or avoid pressure situations, the more dull you're going to be and the less credibility you're going to have. Your credibility, your authority that's being given to you to maintain will absolutely erode if you avoid confrontation.
That's good. That's
literal or spiritual.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. War is being declared upon each and every one of us, and it's open season on everyone. So we should expect that pressure and that confrontation. We should look for that, not because we're looking for a fight, but we should be vigilant to be able to recognize it when it comes so that we don't avoid it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about that psalm, it's David before the Lord saying, you under your authority are hosting me at a table. You're hosting me at your table. You gave me a seat at your table, and it's your authority that steps in to protect me from the harm that surrounds me. And that is the type of mindset we have to have. And I know just from things that we are aware of that have been going on, for decades, that have been going on just this last week, right? It's like, it's nothing new, but Yahweh in his divine timing has our family in this place where you can no longer hide behind the safeguards or the protection that he offered in the wilderness because he lifted it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nowhere to hide now. So that exposure is... You are going to feel those things now.
Yeah.
Nobody's absorbing that pressure or that confrontation for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you are going to feel it. So then the decision becomes, I'm aware of this thing called command presence, this exercise of my spiritual authority. And now that I'm feeling this pressure, am I going to exercise it or avoid it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's why I'm saying, we're supposed to be confrontational during this time. It might be literal. It might be a literal interaction with somebody. And I'm not saying you act rude or, you know, that's not what I'm talking about when I say to be confrontational.
Right.
What I'm saying is when pressure comes and somebody tries to push you out of your seat,
yes.
you say, you draw a line and yes. you say, absolutely not, yes. I will not budge. And yes. that feels yeah. very confrontational.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever interacted with somebody and tried to get your way and they said, absolutely not, no, I will not, this is not, you know, anything like that where they're just drawing a line and saying, I will not move from this place. You are not going to push me out of this position. It feels confrontational on both sides.
Right.
Right? And if you avoid that, it's a slippery slope to where it's not a situation where you get, okay, pressure comes, I avoided it, I'll do it better next time. It's not like that. It's a slippery slope to where your credibility and your authority that you have to maintain begins to erode. And you make a larger and larger uphill battle the more you avoid it.
Yeah.
Does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
On the flip side, the more you embrace the pressure
yeah.
and the conflict
yeah.
and you step into that confrontational place because you've been given the authority now and not the protection, it's the same thing on the other side where it begins to compound and you get sharper and it becomes easier to do and to recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I know that there is some situation in everybody's life in some way, shape, or form that this applies to right now, especially because he lifted the protection.
Yeah.
I know it.
Yep.
I know it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And as a family, I don't want our family to have the authority that we've been given.
Yeah.
We've walked this narrow road up to this point to where Yahweh is giving us the opportunity to mature in a way that he's saying, I don't need to protect you anymore. You're going to demonstrate your allegiance to me in the middle, in the presence of your enemies. That's the mental, spiritual condition that we are being asked to walk in right now. Okay? So when you get to Numbers 30, I would classify Numbers chapter 30 as basically he's dealing with internal covenant order. He's dealing with the level of order governed by covenant inside of you. Okay, which has to do with vows. It has to do with speech. And the reason why he deals with that first in the bigger picture of what we're talking about is because you can't govern,
mm-hmm.
you can't govern with authority what's outside of you
yeah.
if you're in disorder inside of you.
Yeah.
If the word and the vows that you're aligning yourself with
right.
internally
yeah.
are out of order or yeah. out of alignment, you are not going to be able to sit in the midst of your enemies
nope.
like David did.
Yeah.
It just won't happen. If you're trying to assert order in your
yep.
external circumstances,
yeah.
but your vows are jacked
yeah.
up.
Yeah, that's good.
You're entering warfare completely unequipped.
Yeah, that's good.
And completely unaware.
Okay?
Yep.
And completely unaware. So that's why I'm saying
yeah.
when you really think about it, we live and die by the word.
Mm-hmm.
There's either life or corruption and death according to the word. So when he talks about a vow, it's a literal obligation of how you are going to act.
Yeah.
When you, I almost want to reduce the word vow to a more simpler definition of just speech.
Mm-hmm.
How weighty your speech is.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you talk, the scripture says, let your yes be yes and your
right.
no be no. That
yeah.
means you are obligated to what you say.
Yeah.
Because what you say is a vow.
Yep.
So we're no longer afforded the grace or the luxury to proclaim who we are without demonstrating the allegiance and stepping out on that authority and sitting in the midst of our enemies because we know who's hosting us.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
That's, we have to look at what we say and what we don't say as
yep.
extremely weighty to the point to where it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
It's dangerous to proclaim something but not walk it out. And Yahweh is with this level of maturity comes that notice that you cannot just make empty proclamations about your relationship with him.
Yeah.
Anymore. Right? That was largely covered as we were going through the wilderness and learning to survive, as we're learning our identity and obtaining that. He would largely cover that by his grace and protection, because we aren't capable of walking that out yet, but we are stepping into a place where that grace is no longer there. We should be at the place where we recognize how weighty our vows are, right? And so
and I give just a kind of a practical, or maybe I don't know if this is a practical example, but when he's talking about the protection being lifted, he's not saying that you're not protected, because go back a couple Torah portions ago, how are you protected? Be obedient.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's not that he's not there, but you said something powerful. You said he lifted the protection because he's hosting. So he's hosting you, not safeguarding you. What that would mean is you had some freedom in the wilderness to push against his character, because it was internal. There was safety in pushing against truth, because because it was internal.
Yeah.
You're not going to have that freedom out there.
Yeah.
You push against that. You push against his character out there, you're gone. So he trained you to push against his character because it was against him.
Yes.
So he was able to raise you in who he is. You start pushing up against your source.
Yes.
When you're trying to take over a land,
yeah,
you're going to get taken out, because that's what that
yeah.
You're his representative to take over that land.
Yeah.
So what he's talking about, the protection, is the process that we've been walking through in the midst of wilderness to build that identity. There was like a freedom to be able to mess up or fall into idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot worship a golden calf out there. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like, as a practical example of when we talk about like crossing over or shifting and where we're going, when he's building an army and positioning you for war, you don't have time to fight internally. Or you don't have time to fight against yourself, because you're on an assignment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I feel like this is so simple that we don't even think about it, and therefore we don't understand it. But if we understand how weighty speech is, which is essentially vows, but just to simplify, because I don't want us to over-spiritualize something and think, I didn't make any vows. You're making vows all the time by what you say or don't say.
Yes.
And there's weightiness to what you say or don't say in this context. And so if we understand that words are binding, there's also another side to it where silence is doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right? So not only do you have to do what you say, there's also a dynamic where there are times where we are called to have that authority and to be confrontational and to say something, and we say nothing, and that has an equally tremendous impact. Okay? If you're passive, well, let me say this first. If you affirm a vow, it binds you, which to me is a crazy statement. If you affirm a vow, you are bound by that vow. That could be good or bad, right? If we just thought about that in our own lives, we have all affirmed in one way, shape, or form vows that were not him, that we became bound to. We became slaves to whatever things we affirmed.
Yes.
Right? By our speech, by not saying something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to understand that just as weighty as speech is, the lack of speech is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're passive about what you know to say, you are giving permission and therefore affirming some other vow that you're not speaking against.
Mm-hmm.
You're affirming that in your passivity.
Yes.
And you're giving permission to it to enslave you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good.
You know, okay. This is all before we get to the next chapter that concerns literal warfare.
Yeah.
It's chapter 30 is addressing the disorder internally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That we cause ourselves.
Yeah.
What's crazy to me is you can, most people in a spiritual sense, go through life and they feel like they're just battered, they're beat up, they're assaulted, right? They're confronted spiritually, they're going through all these things, they're defeated. And I would say 98% of the time, it's them allowing it to happen because something is messed up on the inside where they're not operating in a level of command presence, so therefore they're vulnerable to those things. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most 98% of spiritual issues that we would deem as things outwardly assaulting us or whatever would be dealt with if we operated in a way of command presence and exercising our spiritual authority and sitting in a seat and not being allowed to be pushed out of that seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He gives you territory. Do not give it up. Mm-hmm. If we understand that, then 98% of those things go away. I'm not saying the confrontation won't be there, but it's not going to disrupt your peace or your authority because, like David said, I'm seated at a table in the presence of my enemies. I govern under constant threat. Even though I'm being pursued and people want to take my life, I'm still going to sit here peacefully at the table hosted by Yahweh, and I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. Right? Doesn't mean he's putting you in the midst of confrontation and you're not retreating because of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you think about a literal street fight, two people engaging in a fight breaks out, two random people are fighting. Most of the time people lose a fight because they don't know how to fall down. Mm-hmm. Is it making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't lose a literal street fight because the other guy's this amazing fighter and he just hit him perfectly on the chin and knocked him out. Most of the time, it's because there's a struggle and somebody falls and they don't know how to go like this and they smack their head and they knock themselves out. Does it make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the same thing that most of the stuff that we are victim to is because we don't understand our vows and how to be obedient to our vows and how to exercise our spiritual authority. Yeah. We don't understand how to have order on the inside, governing ourselves so that we can govern on the outside in the midst of chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
if you're having trouble with confrontation or your natural imposition is to avoid confrontation or desire or try to shrink back into a place of safety that's no longer there in the way that we're talking about, then there's some type of disorder on the inside. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're passive, I mean, there's lots of situations that we've all talked about with, it could be as close as family, literal relatives, blood relatives that we have all had conversations with when we're getting called out or questioned or scrutinized or confronted about what it is that we believe or the way that we're walking things out. And there's been a lot of situations where when that pressure comes or that confrontation happens, there's things we could say or should say that go unsaid. And you therefore, by your passive nature or your lack of speech, you are binding yourself to something other than the vow that you proclaim.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That grace to cover that has been afforded, but it isn't anymore.
Yeah.
It's not anymore.
Okay.
Right? Because that would be the same thing as two people working out a relationship, right? You and Cutter are you guys are not married, but you're working towards marriage, right? Maybe, and I'm not saying you guys do this, but just as an example, maybe somebody asks you about, well, who's this Cutter guy? And you don't really say who he is, right? For whatever reason. once you engage in covenant and you get married, you better say who Cutter is.
Yeah.
Right? You cannot be passive and not say something. Mm-hmm. Understand what I'm saying? That's where we're at.
Yeah.
He's shown his allegiance to us. Now he is requiring our allegiance to him. And the mechanism that he's going to affect that requirement is allowing war to be declared on you, which is the pressure, whether that's spiritual or literal or whatever it is. But for the sake of what we're talking about, it could be next week. Any one of us has a family member that wants to confront us about something, and we have to recognize, number one, I'm developing order within myself so that I can exercise my spiritual authority, so that I can sharpen my command presence, so that I can sit in the middle of the chaos or the pressure or my enemies, and I can be totally peaceful, have utter shalom, because I'm seated at his table, and nobody's going to push me out of the convictions that I'm supposed to speak to.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
So
we have to understand the chapter 30 is dealing with internal order, because that has to come first as a foundation for external order.
Mm-hmm.
You can't deal with external warfare if you're if you're warring in and of yourself, not even understanding why I don't want to deal with this today. This person confronted me and I just said, I avoided it. It's not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Or putting spiritual language or a false spiritual posture on it to make it sound good so that we can continue to avoid something. Yahweh is saying, no, you are the authority, and if you don't deal with it, you have now failed to act.
Come on.
There's an obligation and a duty to act, to speak, and you have failed to do so. See how this leadership paradigm shift, it's really a whole, everybody's shifting. Everybody's shifting. I believe that the entire family, even down to the young children, he is calling all of us to get to a place to where we demonstrate our allegiance to him openly by our speech and by our conduct, and there's no guessing. Nobody, it's like he said, do people look at your life, what do they think? If people know about you, or they've had interactions with you, or they've confronted you, do they know by your speech and your conduct where you stand? Do they know? You know what? I've talked to Yvonne. I don't know Yvonne, but I questioned her beliefs on the law, and this is where Yvonne stands. You know what I mean? Or it's like, well, I don't. You know, I called them on it, and they couldn't. She couldn't account for what. You know what I'm saying? We can't afford to be in a position to where we get confronted or called on what we believe, and that person leaves that interaction like they don't really seem sure about what they believe, because we got confronted and we submitted to the pressure. And this may seem overwhelming, but the amazing thing about this is, like, it makes me think of when I was in elementary school, and I had these two kids that bullied me constantly. These two kids. I can picture their face, right? Like, they're just burned in my mind, because that's how much of an impact they had. And one day it was just all the time, over and over. And my dad finally was like, next time, because they would trip you. They'd do that. They'd kick my legs out from behind, right, when I couldn't see it, and they'd trip me. So one day I went home, and my dad said, next time they do that, he goes, I don't care who it is, you get up and you turn around and you just punch him in the mouth. He goes, I don't care if you get in trouble. You're not in trouble, because I'm telling you. And to me, that's what we should be encouraged, because that's what Yahweh is doing.
You get tripped, turn around and punch him in the mouth.
But we are all, war is being declared upon you. Yahweh is allowing bullies to bully you.
Mm-hmm.
He's allowing spiritual pressure to bully you. My dad didn't say, I'm going to go find those kids. He didn't say, I want those kids out of the school. Change my son's classroom so that he's not around those kids.
Come on.
He said, I want you to directly confront. And guess what? Right? We all have the story. Guess what happened after I punched this kid in the mouth? Yeah. Because I had permission was granted to me to absolutely confront that, because my dad knew once you do that,
it's done.
Those kids never bothered me. We got along after that. Not saying you're supposed to get along with your spiritual enemies, but that's what Yahweh is saying right now, and that's why we should be encouraged. The things that we are currently potentially bullied by or overwhelmed by, if you understand this, because those dynamics are never going to go away, if you understand what command presence is, you will draw a line and you can be in the midst of that pressure and those bullies, and you will sit peacefully where you're supposed to sit.
Yes. That's good.
Come on.
That's the encouragement. The things that we think are so overwhelming that we avoid it and put spiritual language on it, you don't have to operate that way, and you shouldn't operate that way. And the Father is saying, next time you get confronted, you punch it in the mouth.
Amen.
Right? The only way we can do that is we have to have order within ourselves. We have to understand what He's taught us. We have to have the exercise of spiritual authority, and we cannot avoid it anymore. Right? And I'm talking about spiritual and literal things. Okay, now, what's interesting is that's all internal. And like I said, you have to govern your speech. That's a huge starting point. We have to analyze how it is that we talk literally out loud or internally to ourselves. We have to examine, okay, what's my pattern when I'm under pressure? What's my pattern when I get called out in this particular situation? What is my speech pattern? What do I say? What do I try not to say? How do I talk? Am I talking in a speech pattern that tries to be the peacemaker and keep everything neutral and not make waves? That's a problem. Okay, we have to govern our speech in order to be in the midst of our enemies and govern in the middle of chaos. You have to govern your speech, which is your vows. Okay?
What just keeps coming to my mind is, and we've talked about this before, I've said it, but I kind of just want to tie it in with what you're talking about. You know how I've said, if you gave the enemy just two notches of what you gave Yahweh, he'd tuck and run. What's interesting is when he gives a word like this, I can feel it in the room. Well, but we're supposed to be peacemakers. But why is it that it's hard to understand that we should be confrontational against the enemy, but we have no problem being confrontational against Yahweh, his rules, his regulations, his character? We'll attack, we'll accuse, we'll punch, we'll fight. And then the moment the enemy comes in, it's like, well, hold on a second. We need to be nice.
No.
So when he's saying you have permission to punch, that doesn't really sound like the Christian thing, but I guess I'm just calling out, you really don't have any problems punching a lot of things. The issue is what you're punching at is what he's talking about. We're all punching and fighting something, but we're just fighting the wrong thing. And that's the safeguard that Yahweh's given us to fight that out. That's why he's reminding us before we move on about vows, because he's already talked about lip service and vows in Leviticus. So he's bringing it back around because he's training us in this context, because when you move out, there is going to be a fight. We all know that the promised land has what?
Giants.
You cannot treat those giants like they're the Israelites. And the assignment was to take the land, not to save the Canaanites. So we've got some distinctions going on here, because the gospel you've been preached is not the gospel we're about to preach. And it's going to get sticky.
That's good.
Okay?
That's really good, Mom.
You kind of come to a point in life where if you make a decision, this is one of those things, if you draw a line and you make a decision, that I am committing my life to this word and therefore making a vow, why am I being apologetic about what that means and the truth that is continually revealed to me as we walk this out? Why are we apologetic for what? Right? If we're after the truth and we're proclaiming a vow to him and we're saying, I want to live by this word, then when truth is revealed in it or we're read by it, then why are we apologetic?
Yeah.
Right? That's where I feel like he says, drop everything and follow me. And we're kind of like, well, let me deal with this other thing first. Mm-hmm. That's what we're doing. Whereas in this sense, when he says, drop everything and follow me, take it to the level of what you say and don't say, which you try to avoid, the things that you don't want to deal with, right? Now, in the literal sense of this Torah portion, I want to define a couple terms because the context of it is fathers, husbands, and daughters, right? And this isn't a... I think we all understand this. This isn't a sex distinction thing. It's just an authority distinction. So I want to talk about what authority actually is. Genuine authority. And this gives us ways to understand some of the interactions that we get into. Because obviously true authority is not control. This Torah portion is not Yahweh instituting that a man or a father or a husband has control over a woman. Okay? Yeah. It's not about control, because when you gain authority, and authority isn't something that just all of a sudden you come into a place of authority. Mm-hmm. Right? As we know right now, Yahweh is bringing us into the promised land, and he's giving you a level of authority that you choose to maintain or not. So the authority continually grows, right? If somebody, I would submit to you, if somebody finds themselves in a place of authority, they would have the tendency to want to keep that authority, so therefore they will try to control. Okay? If you're given authority in a way of growing and maturing under Yahweh's watch, he's growing that authority in you, and it's something that you're maintaining, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's not about control, because it's already been given to you.
Yeah.
He's given you authority right now. You have it, right? You are the authority that is not being, that doesn't have to be protected. You already have it. And so you don't have to exert control to keep it, because he's already given it to you. When you have authority, it's, you are being given a responsibility to stand in between your covenant and harm, or the thing that you're stewarding, that you have authority over.
Yeah.
Your responsibility, because you're the authority, is to stand in between that thing and harm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So with increased authority, there's increased liability. If you're in any kind of authority, there's increased liability. And the other thing that I want to define is accountability and how this works. That genuine authority and accountability, you will see upward responsibility. So if my kids go to school and they do something, I can't send accountability downwards and blame my kids. I have to take accountability for that.
Right,
as the authority, one, because I need to intercept harm, and two, because that's my role, because I have more liability, because I'm the authority.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's what Yeshua does, right? It's what heads of homes should do, whether you're a male or a female, whoever is the head of the home, you should be the one standing in between your home and harm, and you take extra liability as pastors, as shepherds, whatever you want to call it. Yahweh says in the scripture, I will hold you to a higher account. That's more liability. Okay? Authority isn't about control. And if you interact in a relationship where you're getting confronted and it's from an authority figure and they are sending responsibility and accountability downwards towards you, and they're projecting responsibility on you, that's a red flag that they're not operating in genuine authority because they're trying to control you. When we begin to understand these things, it's easy for us to sharpen and say, nope, this is my seat. I recognize the type of authority that you're... I'm not saying you would say these things, but internally you're in order because you're analyzing these things and recognizing these things, and it equips you to sit in your seat stronger. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make that distinction. It's not necessarily a male female thing. It's an authority, and people under that authority, and it's more liability, which is when that's why Yahweh is saying if somebody wants to annul a vow, it goes back to the authority, not the one that made the vow. It's the one who affirmed that the vow was made. That's who the liability comes back to when Yahweh deals with it. Does that make sense? So if you're think about this, we've been intentional to have men host, right? Every man in here with a family is the host of your house and your family. Your speech, you have the most liability with Yahweh in your house.
Yeah.
And if you are passive or you don't speak on things, that you now have the... let me get this straight. This authority has been there, right? This isn't like all of a sudden men have authority in their home. That's not what I'm saying. But what Yahweh is giving us a deeper revelation of is the fact that as a man in a house or as a head of a house, whether you're a male or a female, you carry a liability because of what you say or don't say. Mm-hmm. There can be things transpiring related to your house that maybe you're like, I don't feel like I need to speak to that. You are carrying great liability for not speaking to that, for being passive.
That's good.
Just like you would if you said something inappropriate or, you know, by your speech caused detriment to some dynamic in your family, you're going to be held to an account for that. Does that make sense? The authority is just a higher level of liability. Okay. So you can see how he's bringing it from the nation level to the household.
Yeah.
Like he's like, no longer is a priest going to take the mm-hmm. magnitude of the responsibility mm-hmm. to cover everybody. It's coming down to each individual and their house and what you say or don't say. Okay? Because he's brought us to that level of maturity, because we have to get to that point at some time, right? When you raise your kids up, they got to move out at some point, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So...
This is what Western culture says. But I mean, in these times, I mean, we are looking at it from Western culture. You keep saying male or female, but if you go back to that time, if you weren't mm-hmm. under a husband, you were under a father.
Yeah.
To me, I take this as a great protection and a yeah. constant reminder of how he yeah. absolutely adores, upholds.
Yeah.
Females. The divine feminine is so important to him. And I think that I want to make sure that I say that, because this next chapter is pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Because he basically says, take them out.
Yep.
I don't care. Woman, kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
But there's something in that for us, what it looks like to be under a father, yeah. under a husband.
Yeah.
The mm-hmm. ones he says take out are operating in another whole. Mm-hmm. So it's not about you just being a female.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're under, he protects
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So
every one of us has to answer for what we permit.
Yeah.
And if you're passive, you're giving permission.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Every single one of us is accountable for what we permit by not saying something, because mm-hmm. we're trying to be passive, because we're yeah. trying to make sure we don't make way, or whatever the case may be. If you're permitting something by your lack of speech, you're responsible for that thing.
Yeah.
Okay? Because you're binding yourself to it. Now, when we go to chapter 31, Yahweh deals with, he's dealt with or addressed internal order. In chapter 31, he's dealing with outward obedience and action. So you can see the natural progression, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be in order internally. Mm-hmm. Then he turns his attention towards external obedience and action. Okay? And it's kind of crazy because if you don't understand this, you would look at this this chapter 31 and you would just think there's just this violence of action. There's this unjustified... what do they call it? Patriarchal. Is that the word? Right? Like modern, the modern narrative would look at this and be like the oppression of this ethnic group of women and just this unjustified violence and just, you know, everything, right? They go down the list about all of it. But when you understand what it is that Yahweh's doing, then you understand the justice of it, and you also understand the greater demand that's being put on us. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, basically, chapter 31 is Yahweh dealing with, through directives, idolatry and the corruption of covenant. I want us to understand that when we look at everything at the level of our speech and how intricate and how small and subtle those things can be, with a great it can have a huge impact, but it can be this very small thing where you knew you should have said something but you didn't. The level of magnitude of that is covenant corruption. And Yahweh deals with that violently. Okay? This is what I mean. We're supposed to have the capacity to be absolutely confrontational when Yahweh shows you it's time to be confrontational.
Yeah.
Okay? Because there are things that will corrupt your covenant, and when that confrontation comes about, that is a holy confrontation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
We have to, I mean, generally speaking, for the most part, I would say in 20 years of just stewarding, shepherding, counseling, most people have this aversion to, well, I don't want to upset this person, or I don't want to make things worse, or I would like to just hold on to where things are at and not lose something. I'm scared of losing something. And so it pushes you out of a place and causes you to act a certain way. Whereas we have to understand there's a time for confrontation. And if it's according to this, it's a holy and righteous confrontation.
Yeah.
You have to understand that and have that permission. And you have to be okay that if the person that you're confronting doesn't understand that and they feel like it's not loving or it's rude,
yeah,
or how dare you, you have to be okay with that.
Yep. Yeah.
Like we have to be, that's what I'm saying. Like, when do we get to the point of we've committed our lives to living and walking this out to the best of our ability. And if that means Yahweh said, I'm calling you to have a holy confrontation, I can't care or worry about somebody's feelings about how they feel about me,
yes,
when they try to corrupt the covenant,
yes,
that I'm,
yes,
called to.
Yep. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Like this should be, I get so fired up about this. It doesn't mean you don't love the person. Maybe you don't even know the person, but if it's a relative, it doesn't mean you don't love the person. But if they're projecting upon you something that would seek to corrupt your covenant, then you have holy permission to be confrontational,
yeah,
because you can't exit the seat that he called you to sit in.
Yeah, 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 right.
He's saying, you are my bride. If somebody tries to push you out of that position,
yes,
if somebody tries to push her out of the position of being my bride,
yes,
she better damn well be ready to be absolutely violent and confrontational about it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It would be crazy to be married to somebody And they just, well, for the sake of not hurting this person's feelings, I'm not going to stand on the covenant that I have with my wife. I'm not going to say, yeah, that's my wife. I'm not going to say that because I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. How ridiculous is that?
Yeah.
Right? So what we have here is violence of action, Yahweh directing things because covenant is actively being corrupted. And what it is in reality is that declaration of war on who we are and our covenant with Him.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just, like I said, it's not just a random group of women that Yahweh decided to victimize with vengeance. Okay? It's not an ethnic thing, and there's two types of warfare. It's not the warfare that he directed them to engage in is not expansion or conquest. Okay? It's justice. There's sometimes where a nation will engage in war because something's unjust and they have to bring justice.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not about taking over a territory. It's not about conquest. It's about justifying or bringing justice where there's injustice. Okay? So it's not these poor women that aren't Israelites just got killed. Right? That's not the narrative.
You guys know who these women are.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Balaam, this is going back to Balaam.
Yep.
Which has everything to do with spiritual warfare in the first place.
Yep.
So going back to the spiritual warfare, if you just stay in obedience, you're good. Mm-hmm. But then when Balaam was like, oh, I can't get them by doing this, I'm going to get them by them lowering their standard and dismissing the covenant that they have and flocking and playing around.
Yep.
So he got them by tricking them, by them doing that very thing. Mm-hmm. So when they go and safeguard the women, he's like, take them out. Mm-hmm. Because it was the women that were luring them in out of the covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is what we were talking about in the beginning. We don't need to be worried about spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
He said 99% of the time you let it in yourself.
Yeah.
The spiritual warfare is because the enemy is going to say, I can't do anything to them, but what I can do is get them to lower their covenant that they have. Then I'll have an access point.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's who these women are.
Yeah.
So they have this, they engage in this war and they have victory. Nobody's lost. And the people that have victory are the ones that did not participate in what they were being invited to outside of covenant. They did not participate. Okay? There were those that participated and those that didn't. Okay? The ones that did not participate gained victory. The victory in the warfare was simply because they were aligned properly.
Yeah.
Okay? It wasn't because of strength. It wasn't like, again, spiritual warfare is all about alignment. It's all about obedience, walking out the way that he told you to walk things out. Okay. Now these women were, I would call them agents of Baal. They were actually agents. They're not just civilians.
Yeah.
They're not just random women that just want to be sexually promiscuous, because Baal is an actual pagan deity that has to do with fertility. It's like a sex cult. And these women were like priests of that sex cult, agents of Baal that were actually moving forward. Listen, these women took a vow and they were acting on it.
Yeah. And then the ones that decided not to uphold the vows they had are the ones that got trapped.
Yeah.
So these agents are actively declaring war on this covenant, not because they want Baal to replace Yahweh.
Yeah, right.
Baal was okay with them also worshiping Yahweh.
Yeah.
But that's because the enemy knows, I don't need to replace Yahweh. I just need you to add
also
vows or add your speech to affirm this vow over here, which is syncretism, which is the same thing. It might as well replace Yahweh.
Yeah, it's good.
Which is where this comes down to being so bold about vows are not just beliefs anymore, and they're not just convictions, but you have to walk out the vow. You have to act out the vow, because the enemy wants you to have multiple vows.
Yeah.
And that's how he gets you.
Yeah.
He doesn't get you by releasing one and obtaining another. He just says, take two.
So then my question is, why Baal, right? Out of all the pagan deities, why is this one showing up right now? Because ultimately what the enemy is trying to do is just redirect or reshape your allegiance.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then I question, okay, why Baal? Why not any other, right? They're running into, their allegiance is being tested in this fashion for some reason, okay? So this is what's interesting, is Baal promises a place for you to settle. I'm trying to think of the best word. Settle or maintain immediately following breakthrough. If you break through in a certain area, but then you're like, okay, I think I'm good. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to fully step into what Yahweh called me to do. I think this place is a good place of breakthrough, and so I'm going to settle here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to maintain here. That's what he's after, because he's not about fulfillment like Yahweh is.
Yeah.
He's not about full deliverance like Yahweh is. Yeah. He's about settling where you're at, because you just had a breakthrough.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. It's a trust test. Part of allegiance to him is fully trusting him to do what he said he was going to do. Baal is a, if you look at Baal and what he represented rain, fertile ground, harvest, agriculture, which is the exact same thing Yahweh's asking the people to step into the land to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to trust. Mm-hmm. They have to trust Yahweh fully. Full allegiance to Yahweh when they have this other deity coming in and saying, well, just add me too to make sure.
Yeah.
Okay? Just let me add, let me make a vow practically in our time. Let me make a vow with something. Let me affirm something. Let me add something to what Yahweh's doing, because ultimately what Baal does is capitalize on fear of loss. So because I'm afraid of losing something or not trusting him, or maybe he won't really fulfill everything, let me affirm or make a vow or allow this other thing to come in. Because I don't want to lose. Or there's scarcity or long-term sustainability, right? You're concerned about those things. There isn't enough for me, so I'll just settle right here. Yahweh's really not that big. He's not that good to really do this. So I'm just going to settle for this little breakthrough. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hmm.
He's saying, keep your covenant, but make a vow to me as well.
Yeah.
Baal wants to be accepted as an additional covenant partner. Right? Like, I can't have a woman approach me and say, like, we should be married. You can still be married, but let's also get married.
I have permission to.
Right? He's a counterfeit covenant partner.
Yeah, yeah.
So we may have, I mean, we really need to think on this, because there may be situations in our life where you are supposed to, given the circumstances, have a holy confrontation with something that is an agent of something else. So therefore, you have to have a holy confrontation, because that agent is actively corrupting your vows. Right? While presenting like, well, I'm neutral, so you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in between. I'm just going to stay neutral in between these two parties so I don't make waves. Well, really what's happening is there could be something that is corrupting your covenant, your genuine covenant with your spouse or with him. It's corrupting it, but we're being passive in our speech and binding ourselves to multiple things.
Mm-hmm. Which is... then war.
Which is war on your covenant.
Yeah.
Which Yahweh says, absolutely not time for holy confrontation. Which you have to understand this. You have to be in order within yourself. You have to be aware of your speech, what you say, what you don't say. Let your yes be yes, let your no be no. And you have to understand that the safety mechanism that Yahweh provided in the wilderness is no longer there.
That's good.
Okay.
Well, and just to add a little bit is to, you can feel it or see it as you're reading it. Like he said, the go-to would be like, why would Yahweh take out this group of women and children? So it comes down to discernment. Mm-hmm. Because you can tell he's not partial to what we think should be safeguarded.
Yes.
He cares what they're operating under.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Child, female.
Yes.
The things that we'll think, and everything gets flipped. The things that we think that we need to be careful with.
Mm-hmm.
Are the things that are operating under another spirit, mm-hmm. and then the things that we aren't careful with are the things under Yahweh, when those are the things that we should be.
Yes.
So everything gets flipped backwards, and you can feel it as you're reading it. So you have. So this goes back to what we were saying in the beginning about that. The holy confrontation is that it will feel like, well, why? But then you have to remember, what were they operating under?
Mm-hmm.
Balaam, trickery, sorcery, witchcraft,
yes.
Baal.
Yes.
But at face value, you have to know what they're operating in.
Right.
Because if you just see it at face value, then there's not discernment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I wanna speak to command presence in more of a practical application day to day, what that looks like. But did you want?
I don't know.
Only if we have time for it.
I don't know if we have time. So go ahead.
No,
I don't know if I'm gonna be able to explain it.
No, do it.
We don't care what
I have. It goes back a little. The word that I have, pretty much, the anointing came when I said it. There, we are going to have to be careful because we are not called to save the Canaanites.
Yeah.
So where we're going, we're gonna have to have discernment on what's a giant and what's an Israelite, because the territory is asking us to take. Like I said, the gospel that we're going to preach is going to be very contrary to the gospel you've known.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's me trying to put words to the crossover and to the leadership shift a little bit more, and kind of tying all of these things together.
Mm-hmm.
Again, going back to what Jalen said with marriage, you are married because you act like it.
Yep.
Not because you study your vows,
right.
but because you walk them out.
Yeah.
Or else you wouldn't be married. So just to keep that at the backdrop, that's the shift he's taking us into, because he's saying, I don't want you to just have a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken us some of us this entire time to even get a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
But now he's saying it won't be adequate where you're going to just have a conviction.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to walk out like you have a conviction.
Right.
You're going to have to walk out like you're married.
Yes.
Because I'm getting that because of the Torah portion with lip service versus action. And we've talked about that before. If I just had lip service that I was married, but everybody saw me out in the community and I didn't act like I was married, then there's my vows being broken.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is all going to tie in. But the word that I felt like I had for vows is I wanted to make sure that we are equipped to understand that up until this point, if we have not acted, or James 1:22, doers of the word, or you're delusional. If you have not been a doer of the word, then up until this point, because of the shift, it's going to be double work. Is the word that I have. And the reason why is because I don't know if I'm going to be able to. Okay, so leadership shift. I'm going to put this in real simple terms. I hope I'm going to do this. Growing up in religion, we absolutely understand that systemically, religion was a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yes.
It was all about you getting your identity. Yes. It was all about you getting healing.
Yeah.
Right? Systemically, we were in a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Dad and I were of a different spirit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we never took the care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't.
Yeah.
It was like free healthcare, and we said we're not taking it.
Yeah.
Does that? What I'm saying this because you guys are going to be cut. You guys are cut from a different cloth. We're cut from a different cloth.
Yeah.
We were in a systemic, codependent hospital, but I don't know how to say this.
Partake.
We didn't take the care, and then when he asked us to get us out of the system, he basically asked us to uphold that system to keep everybody alive. So then we were providing care. What I'm saying is what you're afforded when we talk about spiritual privilege, we never had that. I never had anybody that I had access to talk on Boxer every single day. I barely ever got a meeting. And if I did, it definitely was not for me to talk about myself. It was for me to give them a word. I was an assistant from day one.
Mm-hmm.
It was to uphold them. It was to, we never were like, I needed counseling.
Mm-hmm.
We never, okay. The reason why I'm saying that is because if the leadership shift, if he's saying now is the time for the shift, what he's actually doing is we're going to walk out what he was asking us to shift into 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But we couldn't necessarily do that because we didn't have our identity and we had to leave a system.
Yeah.
So when we talk about a leadership shift, obviously that means we shift. But that means you're shifting.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you're shifting, let me say this, if you're following, then you should be leading something.
Yeah.
Because we're leading something.
Yeah.
So if you're actually following, then you should be leading something, which means you're shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Which means whatever your sphere of influence is,
right,
you're shifting.
Yes.
You don't get to go back 20 years ago and become the hospital.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are shifting. That's what I mean by double work.
Yes.
So if you've needed the hospital, not only do you have to figure out your convictions, you got to walk them out, but what you're leading cannot then go back to some things that because he's asking us all to shift. That's what I mean by there's some things that are coming with confrontation because you have to remember you have to have discernment on where you're at in the storyline. So if he's asking you to go into the promised land, then you can't relate to the things that are around you like you're in Egypt.
Yeah.
The thing that might have been, I'm trying to think how to say this. The thing that might have been a taskmaster that you did not have authority to deal with until Moshe took you out of the system, then you got your identity. He's going to ask you to then take care of a giant. That giant is not a taskmaster, and you're back in Egypt.
Right.
You are a Joshua and a Caleb cut from a different cloth that never operated in a system, and you're not going to let anybody else operate in that system.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's multiple crossovers going on.
Yeah.
How do I let me say it this way. I want us to be aware. I don't want you to use what you didn't do for 10 years as a loophole to allow you to stay in old leadership.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if you didn't do something for that amount of time, then you can't now say, well, now I'm doing it in order to create a loophole so you can stay in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
That's what I am seeing in the spirit. Is that kind of making sense?
Yes.
So an example would be something is corrupting your covenant. A person by their word or deed or whatever is corrupting your covenant. So what's called for is holy confrontation.
Yeah.
But instead of holy confrontation, you say something that we would have said in the wilderness, like, well, I'm positioning myself to safeguard restoration with this person, that is not the time for that.
Yeah, that's good. But it's only your loophole to stay in a pastoral place.
Yeah.
Because we're moving.
Yeah.
Now,
so, go ahead.
It doesn't mean there's not times for that, right? Obviously, we have discernment. There may be times for that. But what Yahweh is putting on notice is that we are going through a process where he's saying the safeguards removed. War is going to be declared on you because you're surrounded by it. And so you have to have this ability and recognize when that thing's happening.
Yeah.
And because he's removed the safeguards, those situations are in our face.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are prominent. Those are the prevalent situations. So if we're hearing a lot of, well, I'm bridging the gap, I'm safeguarding future restoration, when in fact it's calling for a holy confrontation, that's the season we're in. Does that make sense?
Yes. That's so good. I'm going to give a couple of examples because it takes me back to the pillars of the house. Remember at Pesach, I said we just jumped off?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, now obviously, foundationally, there are things that you don't ever not have.
Right. Yeah.
But if you're using foundational things to stay young, then you're not forward advancing. Let me give an example. Well, but Mom, first time obedience is always first time obedience. But we all know that as our kids grow up, there comes a point where they're allowed to do the appeal process. Mm-hmm. And then there's a point where they become an adult and it's an active conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same thing as just yes, Dad. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Abraham. Mm-hmm. He had a relationship where there was active communication. So you've got to grow into authority and not allow yourself to not walk in authority by staying behind and saying, well, this is what we stand for.
Mm-hmm.
Yada. Here's another example. I'm going to kind of go through the pillars. Let me give an analogy first. This actual word came when I was waking up being kissed by the sunrise. But there was a morning where it's not dark, it's light. So I knew that the sun came up at 7:01 because he woke me up always a couple minutes right before the sun would come up. 7:01, the sun would come up, it's light. I know that the sun is up.
Hmm.
I know that. You guys know that. If it's light, the sun is up. But I couldn't see the sun. It was completely gray and completely covered with clouds.
Mm-hmm.
The sun was there. We know that it's there, but it's completely covered.
Mm-hmm.
Before, we would have said, I got to call out the gold. Or I got to call out the sun.
Mm-hmm.
But we are so confident that the sun is there, I don't need to go digging for the sun. I have to speak to the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it was kind of like where this whole thing came of this shift of how to see things. Okay, so I think about blood versus blood. I hope that you guys are going to be okay with this. Blood versus blood had everything to do with breaking off covenants that you grew up in a system that needed to be broken.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let me ask this question. So Moshe had to break off a lot of the things that he had growing up to be able to walk in his leadership, right?
Yeah.
Does Joshua have to go through blood versus blood?
No.
We're not going to repeat history. I hope, and if we do, there's a major problem. If our young ones have to go through blood versus blood because their parents are not their spiritual leaders, we have a problem.
Yeah.
So, is it making sense?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that blood versus blood is not a foundational principle if you're struggling with another bloodline.
Yeah.
But when that adoption happens and you birth something in it, the next generation hopefully is not having to deal with blood versus blood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. So there's growth.
Yeah. Yeah.
That means this should be hope. It's not just about the next generation. That means you should never have to go back to wrestling blood versus blood.
Yeah.
Yada.
we went through a whole season where he wanted to teach us what actually understanding and knowing him meant.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
That was a big deal. And then he used it as an example within our community to really that any conversation you get into, the hope is to be able to bring understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see where this is going.
Yeah.
How many of you in the Promised Land are going to sit down and try to understand a giant? But you will,
mm-hmm,
if you don't understand,
yeah,
why he wanted you to know him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was not to train you to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Okay. One of the other pillars is his ways. Now, following his ways had everything to do with identity. But now, following his ways is going to have everything to do with war. See the difference? See how it grows? It's still a foundational principle, but it grows.
Yeah.
You don't want to say, well, I'm still following his ways, and fall back on, well, it's because I have to learn my identity.
Yeah.
You're following his ways so that you're prepared for war.
Yeah.
And for establishing and conquering.
Yeah.
Okay? Here's another example. We just got done with Megan preaching about the Moedim, and it was a reminder of their identity before they go in.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua does not have time to teach the community in the Promised Land about Shabbat.
Yep.
Yeah.
They acted on Shabbat.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was a season where we learned about it, then there's going to be a season where we're not going to be talking about it anymore, because we're going to show the world what Shabbat looks like.
Yep. Yeah.
That's the difference of what's happening. So that's what I mean by the loophole of going back and being like, well, you know, okay. I think, does that make sense?
Yeah.
I wanted to add, because I feel like there's multiple things going on. We've got the crossover, we've got the movement, we have the leadership shift, but wanting to make sure that we understand exactly what that implication means for us and for what's happening as we move forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the good news. Well, I don't know if it's good news. I actually got kind of defeated. But I'm like ready. I'm like, we're in like two more chapters, right? We're taking on Promised Land. The word for Deuteronomy is second law. We gotta do it again.
Yeah.
So it's not like tonight. But I'm preparing you.
Yeah.
Because come Tabernacles, come 5787, there is going to be major movement, major progression, and we've got what we're feeling now is to really begin to not just say, okay, well, we have 3 years to learn,
mm-hmm,
and then all of a sudden we're in the Promised Land and we're not prepared as an army.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to use this time of learning and learning his ways, at the same time also start to be positioned for takeover.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So don't freak out like it's in a week, but I also do want us to understand that as we go towards Tabernacles, especially for those that said, you know, I'm still over on this side. No, it's a good thing, but just know that I can see double work for all of us. But I really feel like because of the movement within the Torah and the movement within the leadership, not leadership shift because of Joshua, yes, but then also thinking of the history and what he's doing with his remnant.
Yeah.
And just the divine time that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And always want to, and now, okay, Dwayne asked this question. He said, what about war? Absolutely spiritual. But I am in a seat that I'm not going to be pushed out of. That my job is to prepare a remnant, that I am looking ahead, and what I'm looking ahead is to the end. So we all know, regardless of what you believe, we all know that there's a tribulation. And we need to be a remnant that our house is actually built on a rock.
Yeah.
So yes, this is spiritual, but this is also very real.
Yeah.
Always should have been real. And it is real, because I want to be just like the apostles that said it's right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how else to say it, but there is a reality to literal war. So let us practice spiritual war so that we're not moved from a seat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
Is that fine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. No, that was all really good. I know it's getting a little later, but I want to just spend maybe 5-10 more minutes and give you guys what I would consider the practical nature of what we've been talking about tonight, to where you can actually apply it daily. And this isn't all inclusive. This is obviously just some considerations to think about when you ask yourself the question, okay, what does command presence look like in daily life, and how can I make sure I'm aligned with that? Okay. The first thing I would say is it's posture focused. Command presence is a posture based dynamic. Okay. You're not seeking permission. You don't need approval or acceptance from the things that are confronting you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The things that are accusing you, scrutinizing, criticizing, confronting, you don't need permission or approval or acceptance from those things.
Yep.
Okay. Because you have an internal peace and a confidence already.
Yep.
So you don't need permission from those things. You are not on trial.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's good.
When you stop posturing yourself like you're on trial and you have to testify and get approval or acceptance from that thing,
mm-hmm.
the better off you'll be.
Yes.
Okay? There's no requirement to persuade that thing that's confronting you. There's a lot of freedom in being confronted and having internal confidence and peace, and you can take or leave what I say.
Yeah.
For me and my house.
Yeah.
As for me and my house, this is my conviction. If that stirs you up or whatever, or you don't like it or whatever, you don't have to. I don't need to persuade. Okay.
Yes.
That's part of it. When you're a true witness, that's not the same thing as having to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm not saying don't defend yourself. I'm just saying you don't have to all the time. Okay. Going from defending yourself to being a true witness, that's a big posture shift. There's kind of a strategic framework in how you act. I would say state your convictions up front when you're in these confrontational environments. Be bold and confident enough to state your conviction up front, which is the opposite of being in a position of being accused, which makes you naturally have to defend yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Don't get confronted and wait for the accusation.
Mm-hmm.
People should know this is where I'm at because I boldly state my convictions up front.
Yeah.
I'm not waiting to state those things or proclaim those things until I get accused or questioned because then I'm going to be on the defensive.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
And you boldly do your conviction.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a position, not an explanation. Mm-hmm. Don't ever begin accused. You have to be able to block certain traps. Like, don't deny false frameworks. A lot of times when these things will work, or when you have command presence, you will evaluate a confrontation or what's said, what somebody says. Is that a legitimate framework that they're accusing me with? Is the pressure that they're putting on me, or the scrutiny that they're bringing to me, is that even a legitimate framework that I need to accept?
Yeah.
Right? We always talk about get on the right battlefield.
Right.
Almost 100% of the time when somebody comes at you and it's a confrontation, they're bringing a certain framework in a battlefield that they want this whole interaction to take place on.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So my first question, our first question is always, is this even a legitimate framework, and is this where I want to have this interaction?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if it's not, then I'm going to block that framework and I'm not subscribing to that.
Yep.
Okay. You don't have to have the conversation on the terms that somebody's demanding it be on.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Be able to be bold and don't feel like you have to fill silence all the time. Like, just make your statement, and if there's awkward tension or it's uncomfortable, let it. Okay. I think these things become, you begin to become really confident and sharp in these type of things. And when you do these things, when you have command presence, it's like getting in a fight and not getting knocked out because you just fell wrong. Understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Going back to that, when you start to position yourself and you're just doing it in a healthy way, you're defeating 99% of the things that are going to come at you. Okay?
It's not moving.
I can't remember. So remember, practice over theory. A lot of times people will want to attack you on theological issues when you can easily just bring it back to the place of, this is the experience I've had, and this is the fruit of that experience, and it's something experiential. If you want to battle theology, it's going to put you on the defensive. Not that you can't have those interactions, but testify, right?
Yes.
You don't have an aim to convert in conflict. Your conviction is settled. Be able to disengage calmly when there's clarity. Or when you have clarity, be at peace with disagreement when you're postured properly. And you're gaining territory and you're not shrinking back. So basically, you're standing in a place, you're holding a seat, you're speaking with authority and clarity, and you don't have to be, you're just completely positioned differently. Your responsibility to carry the conviction faithfully, it has nothing to do with how that other person feels about it.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And again, like I said, these are just practical considerations or applications, but when you don't sharpen yourself in these things, the place that Yahweh is calling us to, your authority that he's given you will slowly erode, and then you're just fighting that uphill battle, and it's going to be more overwhelming than it was before. Okay.
And so that goes to the double work.
Yeah.
Because some of us have been eroded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So as essentially wilderness, promised land, private to public.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all of that time is now being publicized, and that's where that double work can be. When you're in the uphill battle, it's all right. But just know that you're in that uphill battle of getting rid of that erosion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now don't pick any one thing of what I just said and lock onto that and say, well, I'm just okay to disagree. Because this whole context of this whole thing is you're in a holy confrontation to where you're walking out command presence, and the confrontation is the context of this issue, and you're walking it out.
Yeah. Well, and okay? Based on the last two chapters, you also have to have the discernment. What are you confronting?
Right.
I hope that we're not okay to have a disagreement with the enemy and be like, oh, we'll agree to disagree. Like, I'm talking about like the spiritual warfare we were talking about before. Something's coming after my kids, and I'm silent.
Yeah. It goes back to your speech.
Then the vow is I'm allowing permission to come in and break covenant that I have, then that wouldn't be a situation where I would use this practical application where I'm, you know, like, all right, well, I guess I'm okay that we're on opposite ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah.
You ain't coming in my house.
Yeah.
That doesn't have anything to do with boundaries. That doesn't have anything to do. I mean, there's a whole lot we can talk about. This doesn't have anything to do with what love is. That doesn't have anything to do with what relationship is. That has nothing to do. Like, you got to have discernment when you're talking about this stuff, because you're either talking about a coworker, you can be in the spirit. It could be, like I said, is it a Canaanite? Is it a giant?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to use, you're not going to have a theological conversation with a giant. Right? Because like I said, the assignment is to not get them saved.
Yeah.
So you gotta know what you gotta know. You gotta be able to have discernment on where you're at and what you're talking to.
Yeah.
That's good.
Which the only reason why this is getting brought up is because we're shifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's awesome. We had the safety net of our identity to be able to work these things out, mm-hmm. and then moving into conquering land is a totally different territory, mm-hmm. and that's not when you want to be figuring that out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Does everybody feel encouraged?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're still butterflies.
So, I'm permission to punch people in the face.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah, you just got permission, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Make it quick.
Vows. Your vows should include tithing, right? And no matter what kind of financial situation, you should never be pushed out of your vows to tithe. Mm.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you for listening to this message from Kingdom Heirs International. If you have received insight and revelation with this message, we invite you to claim that revelation by trading on the trading floor with this ministry. You can do that at kingdomheirsflag.org. Thank you.